0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Just two stories that we've got phone calls about. The Jesuits in the UK, I presume the Jesuits in Ireland are going to do the same. The Jesuits in the UK, this is, people will remember our Father Marmion story, and the Jesuits basically didn't report, he was abusing children, and Jesuits in Dublin did not report him to the police. They simply moved him around. But then the Jesuits in the UK, and this is very relevant to us here, in recent days, a report in the media has drawn attention to crimes carried out by deceased Jesuit Father Peter Orr. S-J-O-R-R. The Jesuits would urge anybody who has read this report and feels they need emotional or psychological support to get in touch with our safeguarding coordinator, jesuits.org.uk. Now, we've been speaking to David Orr, who is the nephew of Peter Orr, and it was David who discovered, after his uncle died, and he went looking for his possessions, obviously they were the only relatives, David was, that his uncle was a serial paedophile, and he ministered here in Ireland as well, apparently in the Wexford area. He was from Monkstown originally. He was buried as a Jesuit, even though the Jesuits now say that for a long number of years they were aware of his behaviour, and they simply, once again, simply moved him round. Now, in Ireland, we're told that he was reported to the Gardaí. We're just trying to confirm this, that he was reported to the Gardaí, Father Peter Orr, and the Gardaí, we don't know what happened, but nothing came of it. Now, whether that's the DPP or the Gardaí, we don't know. We would love to find out whatever happened to complaints made in Ireland about Father Peter Orr, because David Orr, his nephew, is trying to find out, and he's asked the Gardaí, and it's very traumatic for him, he's asked the Gardaí for information, and the Gardaí will not give him information at this stage. Maybe they will change their mind. And the other thing we're getting, just to acknowledge, we're getting phone calls about a dentist in Galway, an orthodontist in Galway, and we're looking into that as we speak. Now, Claire Farrell, to go back to last Monday and the horrific events in Ballintubber, Claire Farrell, your mother Una and your two uncles were held up, attacked 4 a.m. in the morning, tied up, unfortunately, in the house. Claire Farrell, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe.
And how is Una Farrell?
Yeah, my mum is doing very well. She's coping and getting over the trauma as best she can at the moment.
And today is a special day.
And she probably would like me to say that she really appreciates everyone's concern and their goodwill towards her, and that she got lovely cards from everybody around the country.
Brilliant.
Beautiful flowers, an outpouring of good wishes and goodwill towards her and the family.
Fantastic.
Absolutely lovely. So, yeah.
Because she was quick to point out last week that a number of media reports said she was 94, whereas in fact she's only 94 today.
Yeah, so she's 94 today, yeah. And it was always a well-kept secret, but now everyone knows.
And how, you know, the whole thing about post-traumatic stress, how is she a week later, Claire?
She's doing fine, you know. I mean, yeah. it comes in different ways with different people. And I think my mum was a person throughout her life that she always was never a victim of anything and always a survivor of everything. So I think that she's of that generation, and once she can get up and do her work and stand behind her counter, she feels it's a good day.
And how are your two uncles?
So they're doing fine. I mean, my other brother is back at work. I mean, the two of them are back. Seamus is back tomorrow, so they are. I mean, in my own capacity, Joe, as a person that deals with disadvantaged, in the area of disadvantaged, I won't go into too much of that, but I feel that it's a societal issue as well, you know. We live in a very kind of complex world now, and nobody really is safe to that regard in their homes like they used to be in the past. Aggravation is a different thing. It leaves its mark, and but what do you do? People cope in their minds as best they can, and they get on with their lives, and they have a new reality to live in.
But this wasn't someone going into your shop who's needed a sliced pan and couldn't pay for it. This was someone, a group of them, I think there was four of them, who pre-planned this for 4 a.m. in the morning in a high-powered car.
That's right.
And went for the high-value items.
They sure did, and they brought very personal things belonging to Mum, you know, lovely jewellery and material things like that, that would she would have had for her lifetime. But, I mean, what can I say about that? They're material things. She feels no malice in one way. She would like, though, the reason she went probably, and she was encouraged to go in a public way with the guards, was because she wants the culprits to be caught.
Yeah, of course.
She wants them to be caught, and she wants justice to be done, if at all possible.
Yeah, and get her jewellery back as well.
Get her jewellery back, and if that's, you know, because I'd say maybe over 25 or 26 years ago, we also were robbed, but it was my late father was alive then, and it was in a different capacity in the sense that it wasn't aggravated. They just came to the shop.
Yeah.
They took out whatever they had to go on. It's a different type of person we're dealing with now.
Who tied up your mother?
Yeah, well, Mom wasn't tied. My uncles were tied. My brothers were tied. But she went through an ordeal.
Yeah.
It was aggravated, and I don't go into a lot of details, but it was aggravated. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that says
it was aggravated.
Says a lot. And the your local priest told us last week, Father Pat, that your mother has a great devotion, a great faith.
She's of that era. She has a strong sense of faith.
Great.
She believes that if she pares it down to the bone, she feels sorry for these individuals. She really feels sorry for someone that would put her through such an ordeal.
Good point,
and our family as well.
Good point. Very good point. Okay, wish her a happy birthday anyway, Claire.
We will, Joe. Thank you very much.
And enjoy. Is there a candle and a cake and...
Yeah, we're all set now. We're all set for the evening. We're going to have a candle and a cake, and we're going to hopefully try and get through this and move on as best we can.
Well, she's got great support, your whole family.
She has indeed.
And I hope your family always realise the high regard you were held in locally for the service you've given over countless decades.
That's right. She's, as I say, 61 years there, and she would have been 10 years working. So she's 71 years behind a counter.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, 71 years behind a counter.
That's a record, Claire. Behind the same, is it behind the same counter? Different counters.
Yeah, so just 70, 10 years behind a different counter. Yeah,
71 years in retail. Wow.
In retail, yeah.
I did a summer job in Boylan's, the local sweet shop and newsagents and tobacconist.
Yeah.
And I used to do, I think I did it for 3 years. Sure, the legs were worn off me.
Yeah.
Worn off me.
Yeah, I think she suited the role, Mum. It was her life. She made it her life. She reared us and she made it her life. And she was very good at what she does and still does, Joe.
Okay, well done. And kind regards to you and your
whole
family. And happy birthday to Una Farrell. Una Farrell, who's 34 years of age today.
Right.
Let the record show. Okay,
right.
Claire. Good to meet you, Margaret, Claire.
Thank you very much.
Katrina, good afternoon. More law breaking. This time on Saturday night in Dublin, we hear the statistics talked about in terms of numbers, and people say, oh, the answer is transport police, when we all know probably isn't. We don't need it. Anyway, we've enough. Surely just get the Gardaí to do it. But what happened, Katrina, on the Lewis in Dublin, Saturday night between Jervis and the Red Cow? Katrina, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Myself, my husband and my two kids were on a day out in Dublin. We were coming back from Riverdance, and we decided our car was at the Red Cow. So
okay.
We got the Lewis from Jervis back to the Red Cow. When we were standing on the platform, there was two young women. And we could hear them coming down from the street. They were shouting. One woman, should I say, was shouting, verbally abusive, very aggressive, on the platform on her phone. She was clearly very agitated and very upset.
Okay.
So we knew, obviously, keep our distance, and we took our children. We didn't let them get too close or anything like that while waiting on the Lewis. So when the Lewis did arrive, we went to the opposite door. They got in one door of the tram and we got in the other. From the time we got in to the Lewis, this girl was completely aggressive on the phone. to whoever she was speaking to. To whoever she was speaking to. So she was just worked up, completely worked up and derailed. And the plight is like just aggressive, completely aggressive.
Yeah.
So there was a woman sitting down facing her at the time, and she didn't do anything, a bystander, just sitting, she was looking at her feet, and this young woman starts shouting aggressively at her, not to be looking at her, verbally aggressive, should I say. The woman didn't respond, she continued to look down at her feet. But a couple of minutes later, she again started at this woman.
Okay.
So the woman responded and she just said, I'm not doing anything, I'm minding my business, I don't want anything, any harm, I'm minding my business. But for some reason this young woman just lost it. It's the only way I can explain it, completely and utter lost it, and got up and went to hit this innocent woman.
Yeah.
Her husband was standing beside her and blocked the young woman from hitting the bystander. Now I had two children with me at this stage. A 7-year-old, nearly 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And to be listening to this verbally abusive language and the violence coming from this young woman was appalling. I didn't know what way to look, what way to do. My priority was my kids. And I was grateful that I had my husband with me. And I think this woman was very lucky that she had her husband. But the husband of the woman that responded, he'd no other option but to block the girl, as you would. He said, I stay away from my wife. How dare you go to hit my wife?
Mm-hmm.
But she got more aggressive, this young woman, more aggressive, more riled up.
And was this the attacker? Was she speaking at all? Did she say anything?
She's screaming and shouting, like, verbally abusive statements on the phone. And then she started screaming and shouting verbally abusive statements at everyone around her.
Mm-hmm.
She was definitely under the influence of something, or if not, she was mentally unstable. I don't know, but like, it was ridiculous what was going on. So that was only the start of the whole situation, Joe. It escalated so much worse. My two children were sitting down directly across from the woman that it was going on, this ordeal was going on. So the woman that was under attack, her husband had his arm out, if I go back to that, I'm just trying to recollect. So he had his arm out, but the young woman just was getting more aggressive and more aggressive, and she started to try punch and box this woman directly in front of her.
This woman who she did not know from Adam.
No, did not know from Adam.
And where is the second woman that got on the loose with the perpetrator?
She was standing beside her.
And was she trying to check her or control her or say...
No. If anything, she was making the situation worse, because she was saying to people, don't you be looking at my friend. How dare you look at my friend? My friend has issues. Just escalating the situation. Wasn't trying to calm her friend in any way or any manner. So another man, it got worse then, because a young man got on the train. Now, Joe, I don't know if this young man knew the girl or not, but from the time he came on the train, he started standing up for the young girl. And he started attacking the gentleman that was trying to protect his wife.
Yeah. Good God. And what did he say to the man, another totally innocent man who was trying to protect his friend or partner?
He started shouting in the man, and getting up into the man's face. Did you touch this girl? Did you go near this girl? Did you touch this girl? I'll kill you. Did you touch this girl?
Good God.
So the man was very shaken up. So with that, Joe, again, I had two small children, and I had a 7-year-old boy, and he was shaking, he was petrified, he was crying, he was higging, and I turned around and I said, can you please stop? There's children on the train, on the tram. Can you please stop? Look, there's children, was the words that came out of my mouth. And with that, the young woman came and swung for me and said, I don't care. And in a very aggressive manner, verbally abusive to me, she said, I don't care what the F or who the F is on this train. I'm going to kill anyone that's looking at me. And with that, she launched at me and threw a punch.
Mm.
But unfortunately, the latter end of the the latter end of her hand, hit my son's head and banged his head off one of the rails.
One of the metal poles.
One of the metal poles. So, like, I was a fear for my life, but, like, I had two children to protect. Sure. My husband then got very agitated and annoyed, and he jumped up and pushed the same, similar situation, pushed the woman back down to her seat and said, you have to stop, this is not on, there's children here. But that riled up the young gentleman that came on, and he started attacking my husband then. Get off her, leave her alone, how dare you touch her. So I just tried to remove her from the situation. The woman got on the phone, the young woman got on the phone and started ringing people to get down to the next stop that she wanted people killed. That she wanted people killed. So I was afraid to leave the tram, Joe. I didn't know who was going to meet us at any station. I didn't know what to do. The girl starts shouting then, who's after trying to strangle me? Who's after trying to strangle me? I'm going to kill them. We didn't know what to do, where to look. We were in a situation that I'd never been put in before.
Of course. Now, when your husband propelled the woman in the fence, propelled her back into her seat, what did she do then?
Oh, she really got riled up. This is why I think she was under the influence, because her eyes were just literally lit up. There was white froth, I'd say, coming from her mouth. She went berserk. She started screaming at everyone, get out of my way, I'm going to effing kill him.
And there's no escape on a moving Lewis, unless you move down, try and get back down.
That's exactly what we did, Joe. In fairness to people, we wanted to get our kids out of the way, out of that situation. And, there was nowhere we could go, only down the tram. The woman then was so derailed that she started hitting and hitting and hitting another man, another bystander, who had nothing got to do with any of the situation. She grabbed his T-shirt and ripped it around his neck. The man didn't respond at all. He didn't know what to do. He looked very shocked, as you would be. How could you not be?
So do you know if anyone, Lewis say, there's a text line you can text now if you're...
I know that now, Joe, and I know that from looking at the website now and when I tried to get in contact with them, but I didn't know it at the time, Joe. Yeah. And when you're trying to mind two small children that are absolutely terrified for their life, and someone's screaming at you that they're going to kill you and get people down here to kill you. I was in no position to take out my phone and start texting people.
Yeah, of course. And when you moved, did she follow you?
Yeah, so she tried to follow us. She was following us and barging through people, swinging at people. And then when she did eventually get down to us, what I feel was the most degrading act of all, she spat at my husband, spat at my children, and spat at myself three times.
Holy God.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
It was horrific. Yeah, horrific.
Now, Gardaí security, did the driver on the tram know about this, do we know?
I asked when I was in contact after the incident, why wasn't that tram not stopped to the Lewis operator, and they said the driver mightn't have seen it. Now, Joe, this is going on, if anyone is familiar with the Lewis situation.
It's gone on and off.
The Lewis operation, that the journey from Jervis Shopping Centre to the Red Cow is an awful long distance, as anyone would know. Did he know or did he not know if there was a commotion like that going on for nearly the whole duration of that? She did get off a stop, two or three stops, but I can't remember the exact stop that she did get off at.
But it went on, it started in Jervis Street, and it went to Euston, it went beyond Euston. We're now in St. James. And the other thing for people to remember outside, I know there's only two Lewis lines in the country, but the gaps between the stops are not bus stops. They are long, long gap. Long so term. Now it goes up into St. James. That's the next stop after Euston, St. James's Hospital. Yeah. So was it still going on in St. James's Hospital?
It was, yeah. It was still going on, yeah.
And then it goes through St. James's Hospital, out the back of long what used to be the canal, and there's a stop then in Rialto. Did she get off there, I wonder?
I can't remember, Joe, to be honest with you, but I know it was going
on. That's a long journey.
It was a very long journey, and it was a very long journey for two young boys, and not only my two young boys, but there was more children on the tram at the same time to have to even endure. It was horrific. Like, from the verbally abusive language to the aggression to the spitting. It was appalling.
Shocking.
It was appalling.
Gardaí?
I phoned Gardaí as soon as I got off at the Red Cow. No, I rang. I phoned, just picked up my phone and typed in Garda stations and Pierce's Street came up on it.
Yeah.
So I phoned Pierce's Street, but they directed me to another Garda station, and I can't remember the Garda station.
I just wonder, would it be Kilmainham?
I don't know, Joe. Well, like, it's the hardest part trying to recollect.
The Garda station, that area, Store Street beginning, then up to the Bridewell, then up to Kilmainham. So I don't know which one it was. But, there's bound to be CCTV.
So that's it. So that's our next follow-up we can do. That's what we have to do, Joe, because it's appalling. And to think that someone's out there now and thinks it's okay to commit all that and get away with it.
Yeah.
It's appalling. It's really appalling.
How are your children today?
The two boys, they're okay, and thankfully the boy that did get the latter end of whatever, a slap, a punch, a hit, whatever you want to call it or put it under that bracket, like, he wasn't physically hurt, but he would be the softer of the two, and he keeps bringing it up, and he keeps saying, like, he doesn't want to go back now to Dublin or
And a train rider, a tram ride can be exciting. Kids love it. Yeah.
And it was, we were having a great day, Joe. We went up, we brought the two boys just before they go back to school. We went to Riverdance and, you know, they went to the new Lego shop, and it was a wonderful day. We went
magic,
to the things. Yeah. So just to be ruined and put down by that, like, they don't say I was at Riverdance. There was, do you know what I mean? They say,
what happened?
They remember the loo. Yeah.
Okay, Katrina. I'd be anxious to hear other people on that tram, or other people at different times. Incidents that happened. Are they back in school?
No, they're not back now. Wednesday.
Within the middle of the week. Yeah. Okay. Thanks indeed, Katrina. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie 51551 is our text number. And thanks indeed to everyone in the Faith Lake Hotel. We had a great day, great crowd, great reaction to Funny Friday. Our next outing will be at the Ploughing Championship. I think it's around the 22nd in Ratisca, isn't it? Near Tullamore. Funny Friday will be back up and running then as well at the Ploughing Championship. David Orr. David, good afternoon.
Hello.
David, and your name would be familiar to a fair number of people in Ireland because you're a well-known journalist. But you've almost accidentally stumbled across a story. Unfortunately, it's about your uncle. Your uncle Peter Orr from Monkstown in Dublin. He was a Jesuit priest. He's deceased. But when he died, you contacted the order for his belongings. What happened, David?
Yes, I had been left some sort of family heirlooms by him before he died, and then I rang his the house where he lived, which was in the north of England, just to see if he'd left any books or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they were very, very abrupt with me. And I got the definite impression that they had not enjoyed having him living in their midst. So that was another indication, perhaps, that, you know, all was not well. And I'd previously been tipped off by a complete stranger I met who'd actually been at school, a school where my uncle had taught back in the 60s. And he had said, "Ooh, gosh, you know, not a good connection to have there with your relation." And that had also sort of rung alarm bells somewhat. And I'd been thinking, there's something not right here.
And did the orders, when you contacted Jesuits, of which he'd been a member for many decades, they just said to you, "There's nothing belong to him here."
Yeah, they just said, "Look, this was a few days, I guess, after his death, and in 12 years ago now." And they just said, "Look, we've got rid of all his stuff. There's nothing. There's nothing for you." And that was sort of the end of the conversation. So.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, then I immediately thought, you know, gosh, they must have really have disliked my uncle.
But he was buried. He was buried as a Jesuit. The death notice reads, "The death has occurred of Father Peter S.J.R., Preston, Lancashire, and formerly of Monkstown in Dublin, evening reception to St. Wilfrid's Church, Preston, tomorrow, a requiem mass." He was given a requiem mass by the Jesuits. So he died a member of the Jesuit order.
Sure, and he got, full honours, absolutely.
But within a few days, they were denying him, it seems.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was on a very local level in the house where he lived. But it wasn't, obviously, until much later, until I sort of began some investigations into his past, that I was able to establish some of the facts, yeah.
And the facts are he was a serial paedophile for many years.
Unfortunately so, yeah. I mean, I began my investigation really with no expectations. I had no particular agenda apart from the fact that I had some suspicions that maybe there was something wrong, but not particularly that.
Okay.
And so I decided once I had some time, because, there were lots of reasons I couldn't sort of look into the subject immediately. One of them being, I had mentioned it to a cousin, and she said, "Look, my mother, who was the Jesuit's last remaining sister, is still alive, and she's unwell, and she'll be devastated if this, you know, if anything comes out now." So I said, "Okay, fine. Look, I'll desist and hold off for now." But once she was gone, I thought, "Look, the field is clear, and now I'll try and find out what's going on." So I contacted the Jesuits, and remarkably, they were extremely forthcoming, which I didn't expect at all, to be honest.
And what did you discover, David?
Yeah, well, they said, I was referred to what they called a safeguarding officer, who is a sort of an independent office within the Jesuits, not exactly a spokesman, but someone who represents them in terms of any approaches they get, complaints, queries, that sort of thing. And she was just extremely helpful and you know, opened up the files, as it were, and confirmed. She said, "Look, yeah, he's your uncle. I hate to inform you, there were several complaints of abuse, sexual abuse against him, both in Ireland and in the UK where he was based. He was a member of the Jesuit order in Britain, but he spent an awful lot of time in Ireland, as you say. You know, he didn't grow up there totally, but he spent a lot of time in Ireland and was often back and forth, and I often met him there, and he came and he went, and he traveled the world." And that was the kind of amazing thing, that, you know, they had known of his activities way back back to the 1960s, and yet they had been unable or unwilling to contain him. And that was the really shocking thing.
And when he came to Ireland, did he minister in Ireland, do we know, David?
He did, in the sense that he would stand in for priests in parishes in the country when they went on leave. And that's sort of when I would have met him. But he also had a lot of old school friends and other friends in Ireland whom he'd visit and stay with. And, you know, he liked Ireland a lot, and he was back and forth. But the Jesuits, actually, one of the conditions, he was grounded after, repeated complaints against him. And I should say he was never charged.
Yes,
even the
yes.
Gardaí in Ireland investigated him, not once, but several times. And the charges eventually were dropped. So he was never... He was never found guilty of any particular offence, though there were numerous complaints against him.
Mm.
And he himself, you know, admitted to what he was doing. So,
good God. Yeah.
I mean, not obviously, I should say publicly, but to the Jesuits who confronted him, and this is now in the Jesuit records. Yeah.
And it's interesting. Today's Jesuit, the UK website of the Jesuits says today, in recent days, a report in the media, this is yourself, has drawn attention to crimes committed and carried out by a deceased Jesuit father, Peter R.S.J. They are calling them crimes, even though he was never convicted. So they're in no doubt about his behaviour.
Yes, I think given that he himself admitted to having... had these, what he called relationships, but sexual and other contact with young people, some of whom were minors. So, yeah, it seems pretty clear that what he was doing was illegal and obviously, you know, morally reprehensible.
And damaging to the young children involved.
And of course, some of whom are... still alive by all accounts. Now, I haven't spoken to any of his victims or victim survivors, as the term is often used nowadays, but I haven't talked to any of them. But by all accounts, the Jesuits, or at least the safeguarding department of the Jesuits, have been in touch with them, and these are people who've suffered greatly at his hands and are possibly still... suffering the consequences of his actions.
But given that he ministered in Ireland, I think you mentioned Wexford at one stage. Do we know where else he might have ministered?
I'd have to go back and look at the postcards he sent me, because he used to send me postcards from all over the world. So I was almost, and I kept them not because of the postcards themselves, but he had a very peculiar way of writing, a very extraordinary, you know, calligraphy. He wrote in script.
Oh, lovely.
And I just thought they were so particular and unusual. And they'd come from all over the world. So I used to just file them away. And that's why when I was researching the article, I was able to go back and see and almost follow the course of his travel through these various postcards, many of which were sent after the time he'd been grounded and told specifically not to go to Ireland, and then, you know, 2 years later, up he pops in Ireland in places like Wexford, as you say, and there are other places as well. Sometimes on holiday, sometimes working in a parish.
Dear God. So he'd been told, the Jesuits knew of his crimes in the UK, they didn't report him, but they told him he can't go to Ireland, and off he goes.
Exactly. They were completely unable to rein him in, and he just continued. So, it's shocking the lack of control they had over their own charge, and he wasn't, by all accounts, he wasn't reported to the police or indeed any other authorities. And that seems very typical, certainly, of the Catholic Church at that time. I know things have changed, but they tried to deal with it in-house, obviously realized they couldn't control him, but yet did nothing further.
But there was a similar Jesuit here, well, one of that we know of, and we got a significant number of calls on about 2 years ago, Joseph Marmion. And then the Jesuits admitted that they had known about his crimes and had simply moved him round. But they did. They have set up a redress scheme and have apologised for Joseph Marmion. But it sounds like, and it's on their website, but it sounds like the Jesuits in Ireland should also put that codicil on their website, that if you had any dealings with Father Peter or SJ, the Jesuits in Ireland would urge anybody who needs emotional or psychological support to get in touch with the safeguarding coordinator. Have you been on to the Gardaí, David, to say what happened?
I did contact the Gardaí while I was researching the article, and they declined to release any of the files, whether they have their interviews still on record, their interviews with them, I don't know. But they were actually not very helpful, I would say. So, but I guess they may have taken the point of view that the cases were dropped. So,
and David,
but I didn't get very far then. So actually, all the information I got came from the Jesuits themselves, though of course I did speak to some of his former pupils at a college just outside London, and I got some information from them, but it wasn't as powerful as what the Jesuits themselves told me.
But would the Jesuits let you see his file?
No, they wouldn't let me see his file. I actually never went in to see the Jesuits in London, because I'm living in France and I started researching this towards the end of last year. And what with COVID and everything I decided to approach them on the telephone.
Yes.
So that was doubly surprising that they would be so candid in a series of telephone calls.
But they wouldn't let you see his file.
No, I think they said something like they had to hold such files for 40 years after the death of the person in question before making them public, because there would have been people mentioned in the file perhaps wouldn't want those details released. So,
okay. So, what was he like when you met him? Obviously, he didn't know what was going on in the other part of in his life, but when you met him as Uncle Peter, what was he like?
He was always a very eccentric person, academic. He was very well read. He studied medieval English literature at Trinity College in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have seen him, I suppose, quite a bit at that time. He'd call out to my mother's house where we lived in Malahide. And I really didn't look forward to his visits, because he was, I just found him very sort of ponderous, and his presence was somewhat oppressive. He wasn't a joyful or, easy person particularly for a young person to be around. You know, he wasn't much fun.
And given his academic background, you haven't a story of when you wrote to him, he corrected your letter and sent it back to you.
Well, I suppose he thought my father, who was very, very close to him, died when I was a few months old.
Okay.
And I suppose he felt maybe some under some pressure to have my my schooling, to take some interest in my schooling and set me on the right course in that sense. So, yeah, he was a pretty, pretty strange individual. But by the same token, you know, he'd take me on tours of, I remember, he used to take me on tours of churches and to libraries like Marsh's Library in Dublin and buy me books. And so, he never gave me any indication that there was anything wrong, and I he never interfered with me in any way. But clearly, he had his predilections and was pursuing them wantonly in many countries and many continents. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was an instant when was it the funeral of his sister Daphne, when he came home from the funeral, and one of your other relatives was very upset with his behaviour.
Well, he had a drinking issue, and I particularly remember that when my aunt in Monkstown died, and there was a funeral service, and afterwards there was a sort of
Okay, is the line gone there? The line dropped? You there, David? Okay, quick break. We'll see. Can we get David back?
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
After his uncle's death, he was a Jesuit, Father Peter Orr, based in England most of the time, but did minister in Ireland as a Jesuit as well. David Orr discovered that his uncle had been a serial paedophile. David, and you mentioned that at one stage one of your relatives said, oh, don't bring this up while my mammy or whatever is still alive. You're the one who has revealed all this. I know there's blogs making allegations against them, which seem fairly strong, but you were the one who has brought this to the fore. What propelled you to do that, David?
Well, as I say, once his last remaining sister had died, I didn't feel there was anyone left, certainly in my family, who would be particularly hurt by any revelations. So at this stage, when I started to look into his past, I had no particular inkling either of what he'd done. I mean, it wasn't until I actually talked to the Jesuits and asked them if there was anything on his records that might indicate bad behavior or whatever, that they told me all of this. So, yeah, I had clues that not all was well, but nothing specific.
Yeah.
So it wasn't actually, till I started looking into it all that this truth emerged.
And are you hoping to hear from other victims?
I'm not particularly hoping to hear from other victims. I haven't even talked to one of his victims.
Yeah.
And particularly during the course of my research, I contacted a couple of support groups for people who had been abused. And, you know, because it's not a subject with which I have really any experience in as a reporter.
Understandably,
You know. And so I just wanted to get some guidance. And they said, actually, would be counterproductive to try and track down any victims, because unless they had given their approval or permission, it might be stressful to them.
Good point.
But that's not to say that now that the piece is out there, that someone may read it and come forward. But really my motive in writing it was I didn't set out initially, once I had talked to them, I wasn't even sure I was going to write it, because, you know, it's clearly such a sensitive subject close to the family. And I was wondering, you know, really, is this something I want to talk about publicly? But once I talked to these survivors groups and support groups, they said to me, actually, you know, to be open with it and to be totally transparent and to sort of air this information and what you've learned would be of tremendously beneficial to all sorts of people, whether they were specifically his victims or just people in general who'd suffered at the hands of clergy or other abusers. And so that's why I did it, because I thought, actually, why just keep this hidden in the closet? It's much better to be open about these things, and it might even be beneficial to someone out there to know that these things don't always remain hidden, and, you know, there's no need for them to feel somehow that it might have been their fault if they'd done anything wrong,
because
all the blame is on the perpetrator.
Yeah. And also to alert organisations like the Jesuits that these stories will out in the end. And now they are openly calling what Father Peter Orr, SJ, did in their tutelage and their care, so to speak, under their umbrella, were crimes. But it's a pity the English group didn't recognise them as crimes at the time and call in the police.
Yeah, well, that wasn't their way.
It should be their way. Hopefully they will learn from that, David.
Well, hopefully, and in fairness, as I say, they were forthcoming with information. Mm. They did issue an apology, though it has to be said it was kind of forced out of them.
But it's the first time this man's name, this paedophile's name, has been up on the Jesuit website in the UK. Is the first time his name, is that not today that that is the first time? As far as you know.
True. Look, of course it would have it's true. This all these revelations would have remained hidden had not I confronted them, and that's why I think, as you say, it's important to pursue these sort of these things and try to unearth the truth. Yeah,
and let's hope the Jesuits in Ireland put his name up as well and advise people to come forward. David Orr, thanks indeed, David. And it's traumatic, or is it? It is traumatic for you as well to discover this, was it not?
Well, I suppose it was traumatic for me in the sense that it was my late father's brother and someone who would have maybe been in a position to act as a role model in my youth and when I was growing up, and to discover that someone who is, I wouldn't say he was ever very, very close to the family, but he certainly was there. We knew him and he used to come and visit, and to find suddenly that someone who was coming into your own home was. But in that sense, it was shocking. Yeah, of course.
Okay, David, good to meet him, all good. And as I say, his name is now out there in the public domain, thanks to yourself. And it's a reminder to other organisations that these, you can't call them crimes after the man is deceased, when the crimes he was committing that you knew about, the Jesuits at the time, you didn't bother contacting the police even. And I think the Irish Gardaí should tell us as well we should try and find out if the Gardaí themselves have anything to say about why, in retrospect, because it's quite clear from what you say, the man admitted to being a paedophile.
Yeah, he wouldn't have used these words. I think he talked specifically of relationships, but
I remember, I think I was the only journalist ever to interview Father Brendan Smith, the serial paedophile from the Norbertine Order, and interviewed him when he was in prison. And he was of the same frame, David. The first thing he said to me was, I never hung around parks abusing, preying on children. I only had relationships with children that I knew. In other words, children that he had groomed, be it in schools or hospitals or through families that he would visit the family homes. He didn't see... Bizarrely, he didn't see, even though he was sitting in prison, he was languishing in prison when I was talking to him, he didn't see the crime.
That was
one of the most memorable ones. I never was in a relationship with a child I did not know. As if that somehow, even though we had previously interviewed some of his victims who were deeply, deeply traumatized by what Brendan Smith done. But it's just... this ability of paedophiles to somehow bracket their behaviour. Oh, I wouldn't hang around a playground watching children and picking up strange children out of the blue. It's a tough one. Okay, David, what you've done, I think, is very courageous. It really is, and thank you so much. That's David Orr talking about his uncle, Father Peter Orr, originally from Monkstown in Dublin. Joe at rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
You heard the stats earlier on different programmes and newspapers about the people... the attacks on the Lewis and indeed trains and indeed buses. But these are the actual people we're talking to now, have contacted us. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
What happened on the Red Line, Lewis, from from Point Depot to Saggart, basically. What happened, Sarah?
On one occasion, I got on at Jervis, and then I think it was the next stop or shortly thereafter, there was two kids sitting in the four seats across from me, and these two men stumbled onto the Lewis, and they shooed the children away aggressively, and they sat down opposite each other in where the two seats face each other. And then they started taking off their shoes, and I thought, what are they at? Then they took off their socks, and then they injected between their toes at 6 p.m. in the evening.
And they not bothered who was watching or...
No.
What was the other occasion? You said, again on the red line, is that what you're saying, the red line?
Yeah. I got on at Jervis and this happened a couple of stops after that. I can't quite remember which one.
And then the other incident, a guy fell on you.
And the other incident, I also got on at Jervis going towards the Red Cow and this fella got on again. He stumbled onto the Lewis. He looked in a bad way. And the next thing, he vomited, and then he proceeded down the carriage and he fell on top of me.
Oh, God. Mm. And after any times, is there any occasions when you've been on the red line, Sarah, and nothing has happened untold?
No, no. There was other occasions which your researcher asked me not to mention because there might be children listening.
Okay. Okay, say there, Sarah. Adrian, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
When did this happen?
It was Saturday night. I was dropping my daughter to school there, and I heard that lady speaking about the incident on Saturday. We were in the carriage. We were next to that lady. We were coming back from the American football game. Travelled up from Cork. It was my son's birthday. He was 10. And as a treat, we got tickets to the US football game.
Yeah.
We got to park and ride Lewis down to the stadium. We had a great evening.
Which you're encouraged to do.
Yes. Park and ride. Yeah. And we had a great day. The spectacle of football was brilliant. We got on at the point around 10 o'clock. We walked from the Aviva over.
Yeah.
And we were a bit tired then. And the Lewis filled up Saturday night. So people, they're out and they're enjoying themselves. But then there was a sinister tone happened, I'd say somewhere, if I was to recollect, James's in my head when the Lewis twists a bit. And my son and my other son, who was 13, were facing this group of people and voices were raised. And then there was a very aggressive tone. I stood up from where we were sitting and looked over. And everything that lady said is 100% true. It was unbelievable. This one was egging. The man she was with to assault someone else. The children that lady had were absolutely terrified. My two kids and my two boys were as white as sheets. We got off the Lewis at the next stop. I was looking for some lever to pull to alert the driver.
An emergency stop, yeah.
There was no signage that said you could phone anybody, nothing. We had seen people on platforms, the men in the black outfits, the security guards. Yeah. But there was no one on the Lewis. Like I was saying, that woman's kids looked terrified. I would say that one of them was crying. Now, I don't want to say that unless it was true. We were petrified, so we got off at the next Lewis.
You got off at your...
We got off at the next stop.
Not at your intended stop.
No. We got off. Okay. And now, we were in the middle of... We didn't really know where we were. We just literally, the next time the Lewis stopped, we got off. It was Shore Road. We had to wait in 10 or 15 minutes for the next Lewis. Now, we did see a police car pull up and go speeding after Lewis. I'd say 2 to 3 minutes after Lewis passed. So we assumed that someone on the train had called it, but as our Lewis came 10, 15 minutes later, we didn't see any evidence of any police or any Lewis. There wasn't any stop in the line. Look, I'm quite aware there are, tens of thousands of Lewis journeys done annually, and, most of them are pretty safe. But I would just like to corroborate what that woman said. Yeah, I thought that her partner was quite brave in confronting them. His family were definitely at risk, and these people that got on, look, I would say they were under some substance. They were I wouldn't like to say what it was, but it was quite edgy, and there were a lot of children present because the football game was on, there were other events on, and it was terrifying. So I'd say
and I just wonder, given that there's so many people on the Lewis, up to, because someone could hold up to 160 170 people, that surely they could put a guard. A guard. A member of a guard of Shiachana on every now and again, at least.
Would have thought, to be perfectly honest with you, right, given the volumes of people moving around, that a presence on it would have been welcome. Now, I know they can't be on every single Lewis, but there seems to be nothing to deter the behaviour of people like this. I mean, they're treating it as if it's their living room, and they're carrying on as if they're in their living room. Yeah. The language was foul, which, fair enough, but there were children present. I get it was after 10 p.m. was Saturday night, right? Fair enough, but the aggression, we were terrified that someone would produce some weapon.
A syringe or something, or a knife
or something. The gentleman that was with the lady who was aggressive, he was encouraged to phone people, as they said, to get people down. He then walked over to where we were sitting, and he took his phone out, and he was sitting down next to us making these phone calls. And that's when we said, look, we're just getting off this
phone calls for reinforcements.
Yeah, by the looks of it.
Crazy.
She was encouraging him to punch the guy's head. She was using that kind of language.
Did anyone video this that the Gardaí can get their hands on?
I did. I took a small video clip for my own use, just in case anything did happen.
Yeah.
It hasn't been published. I still have it. It's, you know, private, obviously. But you can see the kind of carry on of the people, the level of aggression. Now, I've travelled in different cities, and the tube in London, the subway in New York, the metro in Paris. I would have never seen anything like this. And I've travelled, you know, extensively in the evening times and stuff with work and socialising. Just very dangerous. And it doesn't encourage people to visit the capital city. It has so much to offer in terms of culture, events, that you just don't get because of the nature of the country. And we were a little bit later back to the car. It took the gloss off what was a fantastic day out.
Yeah. How are your lads now?
Pardon? They're fine. Look, you put it in context.
Lucky
the two of us were there, myself and Martina. Yeah. Saivar, our eldest, she was with us. And look, the youngest fella had just turned 10. It was his 10th birthday. And look, he was tired. He was, because he was watching all of this happening.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, and I know, fair enough, look, a parent's job is look after their kids. And we didn't have any issue taking them on the Lewis or to the match. We had no issue taking them off. We didn't feel that we'd gain anything by watching this play out. We just literally, I took a couple of seconds of video just in case anything happened. We got off at the next stop and waited. And the next carriage was excellent.
Did you know where you were, Adrian, when you got off?
No, we'd no idea. Because the Lewis doesn't tell you. Now, there is announcements, you know, next stop. But being perfectly honest, the noise level in the carriage, you couldn't hear anything. So we had no idea where we were getting off. Now, like, the Lewis passes through lots of different areas. So we had this idea that there would be one along shortly, and we were going to the Red Cows. So that's served by all of them.
Yeah.
And the next carriage was completely different atmosphere with much more.
And remember, the safest person on the Lewis is the driver. Because he or she, they're not allowed to leave their cabin, and it's a completely, I think it's a bulletproof cabin they're in, and rightly so, I suspect.
Yeah.
But to have a guard or two, remember the guard, if you can, or two on the red line, surely is not beyond the resources of our very significantly big Garda Síochána and highly regarded Garda Síochána as well. Okay, Adrian, thanks a million, Adrian.
Okay.
Sorry,
no problem.
It's an awful ordeal. Thanks indeed, Sarah, as well. Una Heffernan, you're a lollipop lady.
I am,
as you call yourself. You've been doing it for 20 years, and you say you're sick, sore and tired of speeding and aggressive drivers when you're doing your work.
Cyclists are the bane of our life.
Okay, we'll begin with motorists first. When you walk out on the when you walk out with your lollipop stick, are you taking your life in your hands sometimes?
Of course you are.
And what do drivers do?
Well, I work at a pedestrian light, so mine is a little bit different.
Good, okay.
But people can go through the light. Some people go through on purpose. Other people might come back and say they were sorry. But it doesn't matter. They're going where they want to go. And people are, I have noticed over the years, have got very aggressive.
More aggressive.
Yes.
Can you put a name or a shape on it, Una? Is it men or women, or is it both? Is it big cars, small cars, or is it everybody?
Well, everybody. Everybody. Yeah. Everybody is in a hurry and they want to get where they are going. And you are an obstacle in their way. Doesn't matter what you are, be it a road worker, a lollipop lady, it doesn't matter. Even now, I notice always when you'd be driving, if there was an ambulance or a fire brigade, you pulled in.
Yeah, of course.
You gave
yeah.
them the way, but not anymore. Not anymore. They're going where they want to go, regardless of what's happening.
So you're in favour of the minute, we don't know when it'll happen, but there's a proposal, these famous words. And the doll is not sitting till the end of September, I think. But so there's not going to be any legislation or. But that one of the proposals is to double the fines if you are caught speeding or indeed breaking the law outside of school.
Yes.
Would you agree with that? I presume.
Yes, on a personal level, as school wardens, I'm over 20 years doing it. We have no rights at all in terms of our social. We have to go on. We're signed off every summer, every Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's no loyalty attached to a job that people are very loyal to.
So you you don't get paid when the school's out.
We have to go on
the dole.
Job seekers benefit.
Job seekers. Okay.
Now, what
about cyclists? You mentioned cyclists earlier on.
Oh, well, they're a creep unto themselves because they just go through life. You can't get a reg number. You can't get anything from them.
And what would they, when you say to them, hang on a minute.
Oh, they're gone. They're gone and they hurl abuse, curse and swear. But they're gone, you know. So you have no comeback with them at all. And there was a pilot study in England where they were given their school wardens cameras on their poles.
Yeah, okay.
But, of course, here in Ireland, that would be too expensive, according to accounts. But, I mean, that's the only way I catch them. I mean, responsibilities to the children
of course,
that are crossing the road.
Safety, and yourself as well, your safety. And, yes. Una, has anyone, do you know, ever been prosecuted for breaking the rules at your spot there?
No.
Never?
No.
In your 20 years?
Yeah. Not at the same spot now, but nearly.
Okay.
For a good majority of
Okay, say, well, as Angela Scott is on the line, you're yeah. as you call yourself, a lollipop lady as well. How do you, what do you think about Una saying, Angela? Is it as bad as that, is it?
It is. I've retired now since September, but okay. I was 22 years at a roundabout beside Temple Hill College.
All right.
And in 1999, I started. And in 2001, I was knocked down. I had to get my womb out. And I went back to it now. But that's how dangerous it is.
Hang on.
You know what I mean?
You were knocked down. And as a result of being knocked down.
Yeah.
You had to have a hysterectomy.
I did, yeah. I was 39 then, yeah.
Mother of God.
I know.
And was there anyone prosecuted?
Yeah, the police took him to court. And okay. he got a €30 fine and a slap on the hand. Yeah, that's what he got. But after 22 years, hang on.
you're in the middle of the road doing your work. You're decked yeah. out in your high vis and your lollipop lady and your gear and your stick. So this car comes along.
He said he didn't see me. Yeah, he just didn't stop.
But where did he connect with you?
At the back of the legs, up onto the bonnet, like, and onto his windscreen.
Holy God!
Yeah, he came up behind me. You know. He was way down the road. He saw me. Oh, no, he saw me. You know, he just wasn't stopping.
So he was prosecuted. Did he get out of us? Did he stay? I presume he stayed on the spot.
Well, I stayed on his bonnet, so he couldn't go anywhere.
And the Gardaí came. An ambulance came, I hope, quickly.
No, my boss came because I had my phone on me. And my boss came and she brought me to the hospital. And the Gardaí did... they come and take a statement of him. They took him to court. And like I said, he got a €30 fine. And
you lost your womb, he got a £30 fine.
Yeah, yeah. Just as well, I wasn't planning on having any more children anyway, but that's not the point.
That's not the point at all.
The biggest thing nowadays, though, there used to be every 10th car, people were texting on their phones. Now it's every car.
Oh, is it?
They're not looking up. They think coming here around about, they don't even think of me. They're in traffic, slow down. They just keep driving at the back of your legs, and then they drive off before you go back to the curb. You know, there's nobody paying attention.
That's shocking. Even though school, even though when you approach a school at the times you're there, it's quite obvious by the traffic and the children that there is a school nearby. There is a lot of activity.
Oh, yeah, I'm about 30 miles from the school now. I was up at the roundabout beside Temple Hill College.
But he still whacked you. Were you,
did,
were you conscious, by the way, when you landed on the bonnet?
I was, yeah. I was. The poor children on the path, though, they were stunned, you know what I mean? Yeah.
God, and were you in pain, Angela, when you're... Shock?
Yeah, well, I was in pain. I wasn't in shock because I got used to jumping out of the way. I just didn't know he wasn't going to stop because he was behind me, do you know what I mean? He was way down the road. He did see me, like, so that's...
Did he ever apologise?
No, that's all I wanted to, was an apology, and he didn't, no.
He never apologised?
No.
He said he didn't see this woman in a high-vis long coat.
That's, he said, I didn't see
hat,
it, he said.
Lollipop stick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and... That was 2001. There wasn't even much traffic then.
And what about, okay, you say the texting now is terrible, absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it's every car now, yeah.
And what about...
You know, they're coming to a roundabout, so they just look at the and they follow the lights. Always happens, you see them even driving on the motorway. They follow the red lights in front, the red lights of the car in front go on, and then they go off again, they know they're taking off again.
Yeah. Okay, Angela, would you recommend it as a job?
I would, for the reason of the children.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, kids are great,
yeah,
you know.
Brilliant. They're brilliant.
They really
Don't they love their lollipop people? They love them.
Yeah.
You see them every morning and you get to know their names and they give you a high five or a fist bump or whatever.
Well, you're not allowed to do that anymore, no.
Oh, why not?
That was disallowed. I don't know, someone reported that in England, so they stopped it here as well. It was kind of, I don't know, came under the molesting kids, I don't know, touching kids.
I didn't know.
No.
The kid, when they see you in the morning,
they used to love a high five, yeah.
Yeah, of course they did.
You're not allowed, though. I know.
And what about Oon, the bane of Oona's life, cyclists?
Yeah, I was right on the roundabout now, so I would see them coming off the roundabout, and if I could, I would rather let them go. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes you have them coming non-stop. So, yeah. I mean, she's a traffic light. They have to stop at the lights, but they don't. You know, I know they don't stop at the lights.
Okay.
You know, but they would stop for me, or else I try and let them go for it.
And you get little gifts at Christmas, or... End of school year.
Yes, an awful lot. Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
lovely. That's
loads
lovely.
Of kids. Oh, no, the kids and the parents are lovely.
Yeah.
It's just the traffic drivers. I had one fella get out of the van. He just wouldn't stop for me. I was out and going to the middle. He kept driving at it. Because it's a big yellow box and he just kept driving at it and driving at it. And I couldn't let the kids cross because I was saying, is he going to keep going? So I went, I just stood in the middle of the road and I said to the children, stay there and see will he stay.
Yeah.
So he got out of his van and he was coming up to me. The woman in the van was trying to hold on to him. Don't get out. And he was... No, I'm getting out of the abuse he was giving me. I just kept saying, please get back in your van. Please
well
get back
done.
In your van.
Well done, Angela.
I thought I was going to get a punch, but he did get back in the van. And I said to him, no, go ahead then. So I had to let him go. Because
yeah, of
I
course.
Couldn't...
Well, you took the right way, the diplomatic way.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's confusing for kids, though, you know.
Yeah. Angela, long were you a lollipop lady?
22 years.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. All weathers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I just have bulging discs now at the back. Probably jumping out of the way. So I had to retire there in September.
Okay, Angela. That's Angela Scott. Well done. Anuna Heffernan is in Chapel Lizard area of Dublin. Thank you both. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, two red line Lewis calls before we finish. Catherine Dunn. Catherine.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
What happened?
No, well, I mean, I'm just listening to these people. I travel maybe only 4 times a month. I park at the Red Cow.
Okay.
And I get the Lewis into town. And it's rarely I wouldn't see an incident on it of someone abusing someone who's, you know, from a different country and they're shouting at them or passing comment. And, you know, my own son has had a smack across the face on it. He's an adult. He's 30. But, you know, I've seen drug dealing on it. This guy, every time the train stopped, stepping off, shaking hands with someone, shaking the other hand and getting payment for the drugs. I'm sitting there and my mouth is open looking at him. But I'm wondering, can these people... I feel when you pay your fare, you have the right to travel safely. It's like a service you buy from someone, right? And I'm wondering, could they sue the people who, the company who owned the loose? I don't know who, what their name is, but could they sue them through the courts for the hassle and the damage?
Well, that's not, sue someone through the courts is an awful lot of hassle, an awful big risk as well. But can they not? Can they given that it's well known, the dogs in the street know that the red line can be everywhere can be difficult, but there seems to be a particular problem with the red line. And could two Gardaí knock it on the red line? In the Point Depot and get off up in Talla or Sagard and go back in again. Like in that journey, you'd be dealing with, what, 600 or 700 people getting on and off. That's worth two Gardaí being on duty. Dennis McGrath. Dennis, your quick point, please.
Yeah, Joe, I just... they need to introduce transport police the same as they do in London, right? I've travelled...
Yeah, we have police. We have Gardaí.
We don't have a designated transport police authority.
Okay, which is more bureaucracy, more money, more another quango. Why can we not get the Gardaí to do it now?
But Joe, what I'm saying is, what needs to happen for this to change?
Yeah. Okay. Good point.
Okay. Do we need someone to be murdered or someone to be stabbed to death?
That's well put, Dennis. Well put. They could take steps now. Joe at RT.ie. Brenda Dunhill, producer. Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe at rte.ie.